Good afternoon, 4:30 and 18 degrees in Moorhead. This is Mountain Edition. I'm Dan Conte.
You know, you don't think about it, and I don't think about it, but the most they can make at a minimum wage job is right around $13,000 a year.
And House Speaker Greg Stumbo says that means many minimum wage employees in Kentucky are on public assistance. He says that's why Kentucky needs to raise its minimum wage. A murder trial in Fleming County is delayed until later this year, and Moorhead's mayor would like to see a new public safety building constructed within 3 years. In sports, Kentucky drops 9 spots in the latest AP college basketball poll. No stock report today because of the King holiday. Mostly clear tonight, low around 5. The complete forecast is coming up after this news. The trial for two Fleming County men accused of murdering a University of Cincinnati professor has been postponed. MSPR's Jordan Simonson has that story. We'll come back to that story in just a bit. Kentucky State Police are investigating a shooting Saturday night in Floyd County. According to WOWK, Eric Edmonds was shot and taken to Pikeville Medical Center. Troopers say he is a former boyfriend of Leslie Cooley, who was at her old Country Road home with her current boyfriend, Stan Lee, when Edmonds came to the residence. Cooley reportedly told police that Edmonds intended to harm the couple and was shot by Lee when he refused to leave. Police have not filed charges at this time but plan to present evidence to a grand jury. A Montgomery County grand jury has indicted a Mount Sterling couple on wanton endangerment charges for allegedly leaving drugs and syringes within reach of their 3 children. According to the Mount Sterling Advocate, the indictments were returned against 30-year-old William Lilly and 31-year-old Samantha Lilly. The felony indictments charged that the couple manifested extreme indifference to the dangers their actions posed to their youngsters, who are 3, 5, and 9 years old. The Lillies are also accused of possession of drug paraphernalia. The Kentucky Division of Water is investigating a slurry spill into Wolf Creek in Martin County Friday. The spill was reported by Revelation Energy, and it turned the waterway black. James Jude lives near the creek. He tells WYMT he's seen quite a few similar incidents over the years.
I saw it yesterday, and then when I had that major one back a couple of decades ago. The mine does the best it can, I mean, you know. And it really wasn't bad enough to impact, you know, no fish or nothing like that.
Officials tell the hazard station the creek should clear in a couple days and drinking water will not be impacted. Actor and humanitarian Danny Glover was the keynote speaker today in Lexington at the city's annual Martin Luther King Day celebration. Glover spoke in Heritage Hall after hundreds of citizens marched through the downtown area in the city's traditional Freedom Walk. Glover says the country's best hopes rest in a more tolerant society.
Let us hope that this spirit will become the order of the day. We can no longer afford to worship the God of hate.
Glover has served as a goodwill ambassador for the United Nations Development Program, focusing on poverty, disease, and economic development in Africa, Latin America, and the Caribbean. A candlelight walk in memory of Dr. King takes place tonight in Moorhead. It begins at 6 o'clock at the Adrian Doran Center, and we'll proceed down University Boulevard to Main Street and concludes back at the Student Center. Charles Holloway is Chief Diversity Officer at Moorhead State University. He says the late civil rights leader set a great example for the whole country.
He was a person who taught about truth, justice, dignity, humility, peace, love, and service. And so here was a man who I think at the time was really trying to unify the country.
And Holloway says the country still aspires to those goals. He says there will be a march every day this week at different locations across the MSU campus. In the wake of declining enrollments at colleges and universities across the country, Morehead State President Wayne Andrews says his school has revised its recruiting efforts. Andrews says enrollments are down 2-3% in the U.S., and they declined slightly at MSU last fall. He says Morehead's marketing strategy has been modified, although its main concentration will stay on the university's traditional service area.
But then beyond that, we're also focusing very, very deliberately out of state. We've made some adjustments to the scholarship program out of state because we know that Morehead State University's tuition structure is advantageous to an Ohio student, for example. They can come to Morehead State, pay our out-of-state tuition, our fees for housing and the like, and still receive an education more cheaply than they can in Ohio.
In addition, Dr. Andrews says efforts have been stepped up to recruit more international students from Asia, Central and South America, and the Middle East. He says about 12% of MSU students are from other states or countries. Morehead Mayor Jim Tom Trent says the city has narrowed its search for land to construct a new police and fire building to three sites. He says City Council wants a location that has 4 to 5 acres and costs less than $1 million.
It's just trying to make sure we get the right spot, and hopefully we're on track for at least the next few months to maybe make an offer on something.
Trent says his goal is to see a new public safety building be constructed in Morehead within 3 years. Councilman Tom Carew agrees with those who believe Rowan County residents who participate in activities sponsored by the city's recreation department should pay more for doing that than those who live in town. Carew points out that city residents already pay a larger amount to take in those programs, since they pay not only a registration fee, but city and county taxes as well. Meanwhile, county residents pay just the fee and the county tax. According to Carew, that means those living out in the county should be charged a higher recreation fee, but he admits making that happen is not a snap.
We don't have a system for identifying when a parent comes to register their child for a sports program. We don't have an easy way to identify whether they're a city resident or a county resident, and so we've never differentiated in the fees. I think the city's been generous in doing that, but then when we talk about raising taxes in the city to cover these kind of costs, the city residents bear more of the burden for that, in my opinion.
Carew says the best fix for that lies with the city and county eventually having a unified city-county government, which would result in just one tax system. Parents with children who ride their bicycles without a helmet could soon face a $25 fine. That's if a new bill introduced this week becomes law. Josh James explains.
Louisville Democratic Representative Joni Jenkins hopes the legislation will prompt a shift in attitude similar to the acceptance of seatbelts and car restraints. Under the measure, children under 12 would be required to wear a helmet when riding on public roadways and bicycle paths. Dr. Karen Lama with the University of Kentucky Department of Emergency Medicine says the jury is in on the protective gear's effectiveness.
40% of bicycle-related injuries for children less than 12 involve a traumatic brain injury. 100% of these cases, these 40 cases, were not wearing helmets.
Parents who can show they've purchased a helmet could avoid the fine, part of what Jenkins describes as a carrot rather than a stick approach. If enacted, Kentucky would join 22 other states with similar rules. It's unclear whether there's an appetite for the bill, which has yet to be debated in committee, but Senate President Robert Stivers has raised questions about how the measure would be enforced. In Lexington, I'm Josh James reporting.
And now that story I mentioned earlier about the murder trial in Fleming County of two men accused of killing a UC professor. Jordan Simonson has that.
According to the Ledger Independent, the trial for Charles Black and Kevin Howard was supposed to begin early next month, but has since been delayed because DNA found at the scene has not yet been tested against either suspect. Commonwealth's attorney Kelly Clark explained that the Kentucky State Police Crime Lab would have to shut down for 3 days to process the evidence. The DNA is going to be shipped to an independent crime lab out of state for testing. Black and Howard face charges of tampering with physical evidence. kidnapping, theft of a vehicle, and the 2014 murder of Randall Russ, whose body was found buried in a shallow grave near Hillsboro. The new pretrial date is scheduled for March 4th. Reporting for MSPR, I'm Jordan Simonson.
Ashland commissioners made a mistake 2 years ago when they voted to have the city's legal and finance departments report directly to them instead of the city manager. That's the view of Commissioner Marty Goot, who is calling for a reversal of that decision. Goot says it wasn't right to take that authority away from city manager Benjamin Bitter.
I think that just splits the organization apart. And according to state statute, all the departments and under city manager form of government answer to him. And, you know, we hired him in good faith. He knows what he's doing. He's a good city manager. And this year we had over $1 million more in revenue than we did last year.
Following an executive session that lasted about 90 minutes last week, Goot made a motion that commissioners change the policy, but it died for lack of a second. He's promising to bring it up again after City Attorney John Vincent researches the issue. The accountant who audited Ashland's financial operations for 2015 told city commissioners last week that there are terrible problems with public employee pensions in Kentucky, and he's worried that the state legislature won't fix them. Phil Lane of the firm Kelly Galloway and Associates says the financial burdens on Ashland and other cities because of unfunded liability in the retirement systems are increasing. Lane says because this is an election year, the General Assembly may again fail to take any meaningful action. His assessment troubled City Commissioner Kevin Gunderson. However, Gunderson does not disagree with it.
Our auditor indicates he is not confident the legislature will do anything about it, and I'm not confident the City Commission will do anything about it, the pension spiking issue. It's a very troubling matter for concern.
Gunderson says additional economic woes for Ashland right now, while hundreds of workers are off the job at AK Steel, are especially troublesome. House Speaker Greg Stumbo says he'll again push for an increase in Kentucky's minimum wage this year, and he'll do so in the best interest of taxpayers. The Prestonsburg Democrat made the comment Sunday on KET's One-to-One with Bill Goodman. Stumbo says his plan to boost the minimum wage would exempt small businesses that earn less than $500,000 annually. However, he says major retailers or fast food businesses that don't pay their workers a living wage are adding to the burden of the average Kentucky taxpayer. Stumbo argues that the maximum a person who is paid the minimum wage in Kentucky can earn in a year is about $13,000.
That's the most they can make. That's their gross, not their net. So think about it. Most of them are on some sort of a government subsidy. So we're paying to subsidize these businesses who aren't meeting their responsibility to their employees.
Stumbo says he's not opposed to providing financial incentives for businesses to locate in Kentucky. However, he thinks the people who need the most help are low and middle income Kentuckians, not large corporations. AK Steel is increasing the current spot market base prices for all carbon flat rolled steel products. The firm says the increase is $30 a ton and is effective immediately with new orders. The Ohio-based company has plants in six states, including Kentucky. The blast furnace at the Ashland Works is currently idle because of depressed demand for AK products. More than 400 workers at the mill have been laid off. A South Webster firm is the apparent low bidder to remove boulders and other large rocks from the hillside along U.S. 52 near Ashland's bridges over the Ohio River. The Ironton Tribune is reporting that Allard Excavation bid $3.4 million to do the project for the Ohio Department of Transportation. The contract is expected to be awarded within the next 2 weeks. The work is slated to begin in the spring and last through the summer. Volunteers working to put a local railroad history museum in Moorhead's old freight station are putting the finishing touches on the outside of the building. Meanwhile, the group's spokesman, Steve Young, estimates that the renovations to the inside of the First Street structure are about 75% complete.
What we're calling the gift shop area, originally the ticket office, that part of the building is done. The bathrooms are done. We've got a small research room that's done. We've got a theater room where we're going to have a large screen TV and some chairs for presentations and that sort of thing. And that room is done. So actually it's only the warehouse part of it that remains to be finished.
Young says the plan for the Rail History Museum also includes putting up an outdoor display that will feature a section of tracks along with an old caboose and hopefully someday a locomotive. And finally this afternoon, a Lexington lawmaker is hoping the sixth time is the charm. State Representative Susan Westrum has failed in five previous attempts to persuade the Kentucky General Assembly to approve a statewide indoor smoking ban. However, the Democrat says she's not giving up. She tells CN2's Pure Politics she'll file another bill at the end of this month, and there may be a few changes to it.
Nobody's in too much of a hurry, really, to file bills right now. You can see that we're down a bit in numbers. I think we're just taking our time a little more, being a little bit more deliberative on the wording in our legislation, and so it doesn't hurt anything to take the time.
Westrum's bill was approved in the democratically controlled House last year, but did not get a hearing in the Senate, where Republicans have a majority. And here is the weather forecast for the MSPR listening area. Tonight, mostly clear, lows around 5 above zero. Tuesday, mostly sunny, highs in the lower 20s. Lowest wind chill readings from 10 below zero to zero in the morning. Tuesday night, not as cold, partly cloudy in the evening, then mostly cloudy with a 40% chance of snow late. Lows in the mid-teens. Wednesday, snow likely, light snow, accumulations. Highs around 30 degrees. The chance of snow is 70%. Wednesday night, mostly cloudy, a 20% chance of snow in the evening, and lows in the mid-20s. Around the region, it is 17 in Ashland, 15 in Flemingsburg, 18 in Inez, 22 in Lexington. It is 18 degrees in Winchester and on the campus of Morehead State University. It is also 18 degrees. 4:47, you are tuned to Mountain Edition on Morehead State Public Radio. It's good to have you with us on this Monday afternoon. On our feature segment, a fourth installment in a series of historical productions about Rowan County will debut this weekend at the County Arts Center. Morehead State Public Radio's Jordan Simonson reports.
Back in Time, Remembering Rowan's Past offers a look back into the lives of Rowan County's most colorful residents and their animated stories. These series of plays have been written by J.D. Reeder, who has directed them for the Morehead Theater Guild. In the past, audience members have learned about Morehead's first major landowner, Isabella Oxley, the town's first entrepreneur, Colonel John Argus, and the man who the county is named after, Judge John Rowan. They also took a trip back to the year 1939, when a major flash flood left 25 people dead in Morehead, and they also spent an evening with the Young family. For the fourth part of this ongoing series, Reeder tells the tale of Uncle Joe Jamison, who was Rowan County's last Union veteran from the Civil War.
He was born in Ireland in 1844, came to North America as a youngster with his family, settled in North Central Ohio, and as a teenager, he enlisted in the Army, served in the Civil War in the Ohio Volunteer Infantry, the 120th Regiment, saw action at the Vicksburg Campaign in 1863, was wounded, taken prisoner, and survived the war.
The story that the Theater Guild would be performing focuses on Jamison's trip to Gettysburg in 1938 for a reunion of Civil War veterans and to honor the 75th anniversary of the battle that took place there.
He made the trip accompanied by a local newspaper writer named Woody Hinton, who filed a series of news stories about their adventures, which provided the background that I used to develop the story and the script.
Along with Jamison and newspaper writer Woody Hinton, the play will bring to life several other engaging characters, such as William Rittenhouse, a soldier who served with Jamison, and Confederate veteran John Walker. Reeder says meeting someone from the opposing side helped Jamison better understand the conflict.
So he certainly learned about another part of the war that he had no direct involvement in. They exchanged some conversation that probably led to a better understanding of things between the two of them, one old soldier from one side and another from the other side of that conflict.
Not only is Back in Time, Remembering Rounds Past, a joyful theater performance, but it also serves as a fundraiser for the Rowan County Arts Center in Moorhead. Reeder says past such efforts have done well, and he's expecting nothing less from Uncle John Jamison's tale.
They've always been very well attended. We don't have grand ambitions for these. We figure if we raise $1,000 or $2, that's pretty good turnout, and they've all been very successful so far. There's a great deal of interest in local history here.
The performances are scheduled for this Friday and Saturday, the 22nd and 23rd, starting at 7 p.m., with live music and refreshments beginning at 6:30. Tickets are $10 and can be purchased at the door or in advance by calling the Art Center at 606-783-9857. Reporting for Moorhead State Public Radio, I'm Jordan Simonson.
It is 4:51. You are listening to Mountain Edition on Moorhead State Public Radio. All Things Considered comes your way at 5 o'clock. And Michael has sports in 30 seconds.
Support for MSPR comes from Kentucky One Health, hosting a job fair with on-site interviews at St. Joseph Mount Sterling on Tuesday, January 26th from 4:30 to 7:30. Career opportunities include a medical laboratory technician, certified phlebotomist, surgical technician, nursing assistant, EKG technician, and registered nurse positions. You can apply online at KentuckyOneHealth.org/careers. The phone number is 606-285-6420. Kentucky One Health is an equal opportunity employer.
Cats dip to 23 in the rankings. Good afternoon. I'm MSPR's Michael Gustin with the sports report. The AP Top 25 men's basketball poll is out. Here's Jack Briggs with the latest.
As expected, Oklahoma has taken over the number one spot in the Associated Press men's basketball poll. Not only that, the 15-1 Sooners are a unanimous choice. This is Oklahoma's first time at number one since the final 2 weeks of 89-90. In a topsy-turvy season, Oklahoma becomes the fifth school to be number one this season, joining North Carolina, Kentucky, Michigan State, and Kansas. North Carolina jumps three spots to number two, while Kansas dropped two to number three. Rounding out the first five are Villanova and Xavier. The second five features West Virginia, Maryland, SMU, Iowa, and Texas A&M. This is Jack Briggs.
After watching his team's three-game winning streak end with an 84-82 overtime loss Saturday at Eastern Illinois, Moorhead State basketball coach Sean Wood says it's back to work for his Eagles. Wood says the defeat can be traced back to MSU's lack of discipline at the end of regulation and in overtime. He adds that can't happen again.
To be champions, you got to learn how to win these type of games. We won one the other day, but we didn't finish it today. And in my mind, we shouldn't have never been in this position anyway to even for it to go into overtime.
At 9-8 overall and 3-2 in the OVC, the Eagles will try to get back on the winning track Thursday when they entertain Tennessee Tech. Kentucky basketball coach John Calipari says the Wildcats still aren't getting enough from most of their post players. UK is regrouping after Saturday's 75-70 upset loss at Auburn. According to Calipari, with many of the Cats' inside guys remaining no-shows, that's putting a lot of unfair pressure on freshman guards Isaiah Briscoe and Jamal Murray.
I'm expecting them to be 23-year-old winning basketball players who are 19 and aren't ready for this. But they're going to have to grow up fast if we're going to, you know, take this thing and where it needs to go.
4-3 in their last seven games, Kentucky plays an SEC game at Arkansas Thursday. As for the MSU women, they hope to ring up a second straight OVC win when they host Austin Peay on Wednesday evening. Coach Greg Todd was pleased with the Eagles' play in the third and fourth quarters of their 85-77 weekend victory at Eastern Illinois. He says they'll need more of the same thing as they try to get back in contention for a conference postseason tourney spot.
Good basketball teams have got to play better in the second half, just the way it is. You got to keep yourself in the game in the first half, but games most of the time in this league are decided in the second half.
Led by Shane Steele's 19 points, the Moorhead women placed five players in double figures in their win at EIU. A rematch of last June's NBA Finals will take place tonight in Cleveland. Matt Lodi has the coverage.
The defending NBA champion Golden State Warriors take on the team they beat to win the title last season tonight as they're in Cleveland to take on the 28-10 Cleveland Cavaliers. The Warriors topped the Cavs in an NBA Finals rematch on Christmas Day 89-83 as at the time they were on a 24-game win streak to start the season. Golden State has dropped two of their last three, including losing by 18 to Detroit on Saturday. They sit at 37-4 on the season. The Warriors beat Cleveland in six games to win the NBA title last June, including the clincher on the Cavs' home court. Matt Lodi, Cleveland.
With a seven-game winning streak in tow, the Rowan County boys basketball team will play host to Russell Tuesday evening at 7:30 at Cooper Gym. That streak has helped Coach Sean Thacker's Vikings build their record to 10-5.
We were pleased, considering where we were and how we looked in our first scrimmage, and to be in a situation where we're considered one of the top three or four teams in our region, which means we have a chance, we have a shot at it, and at this point in time, that's all you can ask for.
Russell is just 5-14 this year. The Red Devils have three players averaging double figures, led by junior guard Ethan Rabies, 14 points a game. The Rowan County girls basketball team topped the Russell Red Devils 62-47 at home this afternoon in the MLK Classic. Taking charge for the Lady Vikings was Morgan Berry scoring 18 points and Allison Callahan downing 13. The win extended Rowan's winning streak to six straight with an overall record of 14-5. The NFL is down to its final four teams. In the AFC, it will be another Peyton Manning-Tom Brady showdown with the Denver Broncos hosting the New England Patriots. The meeting will mark the 17th time the two future Hall of Fame QBs have met. In the NFC, it will be the Carolina Panthers hosting the Arizona Cardinals. The matchup will be the first time two Heisman Trophy winning quarterbacks have faced off in the NFL playoffs. Cardinals quarterback Carson Palmer led the league in total QBR, while Cam Newton led the league in total touchdowns with 45. The AFC Championship will be played first Sunday at 3:05, with the NFC Championship following at 6:40. And finally, in sports today, the second day of play at the Australian Open begins tonight. Highlighting the court will be number two seeds in the tournament, Andy Murray and Simona Halep. For Moorhead State Public Radio Sports, I'm Michael Gustin reporting.
Support for MSPR comes from MSU Athletics online at msueagles.com. Women's basketball hosts Austin Peay at 6 p.m. this Wednesday, January 20th. And men's basketball welcomes Tennessee Tech at 7 p.m. on Thursday the 21st. Tickets are available from the MSU Eagle Ticket Office, 783-2386, or online at msueagles.com. Once again, no stock report today because of the King holiday. And recapping the weather forecast for the MSPR listening area, mostly clear tonight, lows around 5 above. Tuesday, mostly sunny, highs in the lower 20s, lowest wind chill readings from 10 below 0 to 0 in the morning. Tuesday night, not as cold, partly cloudy in the evening, then mostly cloudy with a 40% chance of snow late. Lows in the mid-teens. Wednesday, snow likely, light snow accumulations. Highs around 30, the chance of snow is 70%. Wednesday night, mostly cloudy, a 20% chance of snow in the evening, then lows in the mid-20s. Around the region, 17 degrees in Ashland, 15 in Flemingsburg, 18 in Inez, 22 in Lexington, 18 degrees in Winchester, and 18 degrees on the campus of Moorhead State University. And that's it for us on Mountain Edition this afternoon. We had assistance from Chuck Baraz, Tanner Boyd, Jordan Simonson, Braxton Howard, Sam Steyer, Michael Gustin, from our staff, from WUKY, Josh James. This is Moorhead State Public Radio, WMKY Moorhead, and translator W202BH Inez. Our show is archived daily on the web at WMKY.org. For all of the MSPR News team, I'm Dan Conte, Morehead State Public Radio News. All Things Considered is next. It's 5 o'clock.